David, we have to talk about the breaking news because this is a news-driven program. I'm sure you're aware of this story. 27 dead, including 4 children, in an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut.
Yes, of course.
This is obviously something that's so ugly for people, you know, for everybody, but, I mean, for myself as someone who has a child in public schools, you know, you just wonder if there's going to be something going on there. And, I mean, it's just such a despicable situation. It's unthinkable, really. I mean, I don't know, you know, this is a relatively new phenomenon in the society where we have these sorts of mass killings of children. These are elementary school children. That's beside the point. Any mass killing is despicable.
Yes, of course.
David, I mean, my comment, I'd like to hear yours, but what my first thoughts on this is that I think we need to learn the example that is put forth by the Israelis. In Israel, 1975, there was a massacre at a kindergarten in Ma'alot, which is in the northern part of the country. I'm sure you know about that.
Yeah.
Terrorists showed up, and they basically machine-gunned a room with 50 children, and killed them all. And they were stopped by the military. The response to that by the Israeli society was that you had boobies and zadies basically with guns watching schools and watching public places. I mean, and that's continued. And the Israelis know how to use guns. I mean, it's just as a part of the culture at this point. I mean, there was an experiment in gun control before Ma'alot. But I think that as a result, there's very few instances of this in Israel. I mean, they certainly have terrorism, of course, but you don't have this kind of insane situation where people show up and start shooting people because they know that if they do, there's someone there that's going to take them out. I mean,
well,
I don't know if
I mean,
that's where we've come.
Before what you cited, before this change, this experiment that was done of having people have guns at the schools, how many of these incidents at schools were there?
In the United States?
No, in Israel.
Very few, but the point is that just before the Ma'alot incident, there was a movement toward removing people's private citizens from having guns, and that they reversed that right afterwards.
Yeah, so removing private citizens' guns led to one of these incidents, and then they put people with guns in the classrooms, and then there have been zero. So
Exactly.
It's a little too anecdotal for me to draw any broad conclusions, unfortunately.
Okay.
It doesn't stand up scientifically.
Well, we'll let our listeners decide that, David. I mean, I don't know if you want to view that as an anecdote, fine. I would argue that
one instance where there was one shooting in a classroom. I mean, you know, here's the thing, Chuck. I think we've got a huge problem in this country with this type of incident. And, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, if we just had more guns in the country, everybody would be safer. We need more guns. Everybody should be carrying guns, then nothing like this would happen. Unfortunately, the reality is that the way this individual was armed with 2 guns in this classroom, he maybe if there were other people with guns in that classroom, he would have been able to kill less people, right? He would have been able to maybe only kill 9 or 10, and then he would have gotten shot. But let's be honest, if a 2 or 3-way firefight starts in the classroom, it's very possible some of these kids would have been killed by whoever was then using the gun on the gunman, right? I mean, these are crazy, hyped-up situations. So the blanket idea that just having more people with guns in the classroom is the solution is silly, and I can't imagine that anybody above, you know, a high school education would think that's the solution.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying more people with guns in such a generic sense.
Because I hear people say it all the time, but I'm glad you don't think so.
No, and I haven't heard anyone say that. I think the suggestion that I'm making, and the one that's generally suggested, is that there should be maybe 1 or 2 people at that school who has a gun and who knows how to use it. And,
okay, so then when this happened, they would have been able to start running down the hallway to find the right classroom, and then maybe only, I don't know, 12 of the people were dead.
That's right. They might have saved
a
life.
Right?
Maybe,
I mean, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about saving maybe 1 life, but the point is that if somebody on that school was able to have the proper training, I mean, I don't think everybody should have a gun. I mean, I think there should be what we used to have actually in this country and what certainly is in Israel, which is training, and you have to get a license. You have to learn how to use it, But I think that if there was somebody in that school who did know how to use a gun and had one, maybe they would have saved 1 life. Maybe instead of 27 dead, there'd be 26 dead.
Yeah,
but
I don't disagree with you. I mean, in my high school, there was a resource officer, one officer. He had a gun, and he was in school. And I'm not against that. You know, I'm not against what you're suggesting, which is there's a person in the school who is trained to use a gun, and if there's a situation like this, which obviously statistically, if you consider the number of schools and number of school days are very, very rare, maybe they can do something. I don't disagree with you there.
Right. Okay. Then we're on the same side. I mean, my daughter attended actually when she was younger, a private Jewish school, and there was a guy guarding the door with a gun. I mean, it's just to my way of thinking, the fact that there was someone there who was ready to do that was a deterrent. This father who went in there, who we don't know the details yet, but he may not have been as quick to do this if he had known that there was someone there at the door watching. But maybe he would have, and maybe there might have been a firefight, and who knows. But the point is that the school was there defenseless. There was nobody there to defend anybody. And, you know, to call the police, I mean, by the time they got there, it was already too late. And I think that the lesson here, and again, this is a lesson that I think is pretty standard in Israel. If you want to view it as anecdotal, fine. But I think that when you go to the state of Israel, you know that if somebody shows up ready to kill someone and they go to a public place, just about everybody in that place is armed, or at least they think they're armed. And I think it has served as a deterrent. That's my opinion. Let listeners decide. But the point is that this is a situation where, unfortunately, we have public venues filled with a lot of people, and these criminals, these monsters, these insane people, know that they can go in there with impunity because no one's going to stop them. I mean, the same deal with that movie theater.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly have a significant problem in this country where people are driven to commit these acts. I agree with you.
And I'm suggesting as an anecdote to this problem in this country that more people need to be trained to defend not only themselves, but in general the public.
You're
and
suggesting
I think
that as an anecdote or as an antidote?
Antidote. Thank you, David.
Oh, okay.
You're a great grammarian. And I think that's a situation that once existed. I don't know how effective it was, but it does seem to me that there's been an uptick in the past maybe several decades of these sorts of instances, and it does seem to target people in situations where the killer believes that no one's going to be there with a gun to stop him. Anyway, unless you want to comment further, I'd like to move to another topic.
Sure, let's move on.
There's, you know, this is something that you may agree or not agree, but and you might say I'm being anecdotal here, but, you know, I'm more than a casual observer of the passing scene. I've interviewed people from all walks of life for long periods of time, and I've noticed that there's at best an antipathy, if not a scornful attitude, a dislike on the part of people who are so-called progressives for religious people. And I think in your case, David, and I say that I derived this from your emails and some of the talking points that you send out, your scornful attitude tends to be more equal opportunity than others that I see on the left. In other words, you don't confine it just to fundamentalist Christians and maybe Orthodox Jews. You tend to also have taken on Muslims. You've taken on Satanists. I saw something from you recently. You were critical of somebody painting a pentagram on their back. And I think that's where you're a little different than many liberals that I've known who simply focus on Bible-believing fundamentalist Christians. My question to you is, what's the deal with that? What is the problem with religious people?
There's absolutely no problem with religious people by sheer virtue of being religious. So I have two different problems. One is, as you indicated, I have a problem any time that in the name of religion, violence, child abuse, discrimination, hate, or anything like that is placed upon others. So that's problem number one. So whether it's the Muslim mom the other day who beat her child to death because he didn't memorize the Quran, or the countless stories of Christian child abuse in the name of Jesus, so on and so forth, that I have a problem with. Number two, though, is I have a real big problem with legislators creating law or using as reasons for why something should or shouldn't be legal or funded by the government or whatever, citing religion. So I don't have this fantasy idea that if there is a politician who is religious, that his religion will in no way affect how he legislates or tries to legislate. My problem is that any time that, for example, as we see countless times in the South and Midwest of the United States, what the Bible says is cited as the reason for why a legislator believes something should or shouldn't be law, that I have a huge, huge problem with. It's a huge problem in this country, and it's something we need to eradicate.
Really? Well, I mean, look, David, first of all, your first point, I mean, I would agree with you. If some religion or some group advocates child abuse, I have a problem with that, too. I mean, I think you can get that on, you know, from nutcakes, whether they're religious or not, and that's wrong. It's illegal. It's criminal,
well, hold on
and they
a second.
Should be prosecuted.
You can get it from anybody, but I would recommend to you and your audience the book Breaking Their Will by Janet Heimlich. I recently interviewed her, which goes into extreme detail about religious child maltreatment. And you'll see that while we can kind of play the equivocation game of, hey, there's nutty people on all sides, this is a significant problem in this country, specifically religious child maltreatment under the guise of religion.
Well, if that's going on, then I agree with you. There should not be child abuse by anybody in the name of anything.
Okay.
I guess that just I'm more interested in your second point. That I couldn't disagree with you more. But on the first point, can you give me a quick overview of what kind of child abuse this author is suggesting, and how widespread is it?
I mean, Chuck, just you know, Google this. We have countless stories of people. Of parents not bringing their children for actual medical treatment because they believe that God doesn't like antibiotics or that they
mm-hmm.
should pray instead of getting surgery.
Well, that's the
These
Christian
are widespread.
Scientists.
There's so many, you know, it's like if you ask me, outline every time I put gas in my car. It's like I do it so regularly, I don't know. We cover these stories constantly. This is just constant. This stuff is happening all the
okay.
time.
All right. No, look, I mean, the Christian Scientists are, I think, the group you're talking about, and they do teach that they won't
even... Evangelicals are in this boat of beating their kids because they think that's what God would want. This goes way beyond Christian Scientists.
Well, I haven't heard of evangelicals not going to a doctor. I mean, I think that tends to be Christian Scientists, and,
Well, just because you haven't heard of it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You admit it's not a topic.
I didn't say it doesn't.
Much.
I didn't say it doesn't exist. I mean, I've heard
okay.
cases of some child abuse going on in the very Orthodox community in New York, too. But I think that with Christian Scientists, there are situations, and they're rare, where they have a child who definitely needs medical help. I mean, they need surgery.
Check out
and
the book, because Christian Science is not even a major part of it. But I'm glad to get to the second issue, which is the political
one. Oh, okay.
One.
We'll get to the second issue, but I just want to say that I don't think that Christians generally are against taking their children to doctors. You may
no,
say
I didn't
otherwise.
Say that either. I'm just
talking
about various things that have happened.
No, I understand that. I don't think it's pervasive. I'll look into it, though. Maybe it is. I mean, I'll get back to you on that. I haven't heard of Christians being against doctors. And as far as beating their children, spanking maybe. I don't like spanking personally. I would never do it to my own child. But
it's widely documented that there are Christian sects that actually have textbooks, which are guides, basically explaining to parents how they need to, up to and including murder, depending on the behavior of their child, discipline their children. It's pretty extensive.
I know
it's not your area of expertise, but I would encourage you to look into it.
I have not heard of Christians advocating murder of their children. Maybe they are. I mean, send me
we
some links to it.
We just had a congressional candidate actually say that he believes, this was just a few months ago, I forget his name, somewhere in the South, saying that he believes that by the word of the Bible, or as God as he says it, that the death penalty imposed by parents on children should be on the table. This is crazy.
Well, that's craziness, and that's totally against the Bible, and it's utterly against certainly Jewish tradition. I think also Christian tradition. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but these people probably have a mental problem. I mean, that's a great exception. But I want to go on to the other issue you brought up, because that's key, that Christians should not look to, or religious people, but in this case we are talking about Christians, they should not look to their faith when they enter into public life.
I didn't say, if that's what your
okay.
opinion is, that's fine, but I didn't say that.
No, it's not. But you said that you think you have a big problem when people who are in government, elected officials who happen to be Christian, look to the Bible, which is their faith, when they make moral and ethical decisions in government.
Let me rephrase it the way I
sure.
believe that it is. I have absolutely no problem with someone's faith being a part of their entire worldview when it comes to politics, as their education, family upbringing, socioeconomic status, where they've traveled in their lives, all of these things invariably, of course, will play a part in their career as public servants. What I'm against is, for example, if a candidate or politician opposes gay marriage, because that's what the Bible says, I believe that given the separation of church and state and the fact that not everybody who will be subject to those laws follows the religion of that individual, citing the Bible as a reason why gay people shouldn't get married is just not valid. It just is not valid. You can still be opposed to marriage equality for other reasons, but the Bible is not a valid reason, at least as far as the legal system is concerned.
Well, and the judicial system, by the way, does not say that. The judicial system says that people have a right to quote the Bible and look to it for their opinions, and you can quote a judicial decision that contradicts that. I'd like to hear it. But I guess my question to you, David, would be, what if somebody says that they're opposed to gay marriage not because of the Bible, just because they oppose it? Why should they get to take a position on that? But if somebody happens to believe in the Bible, you think that should be banned. You think they should be expunged from the right to express that opinion.
They can take any position they want. They just have to be able, if they want to debate it, they should be able to debate it without citing the Bible. And you know,
why?
In the interest of bipartisanship and so on and so forth, if we removed the religious crutch in political debates, it actually would be really positive because it would create a common denominator, right? Many issues are so religiously loaded that people of varying faiths can't have honest, reasonable conversations because it gets into a question of, well, whose belief system is more right here? Let's talk about our Bible versus our Quran. If we're talking about civil law and people getting married, for example, or abortion or whatever, let's create a common denominator by not including different religious beliefs in it. Because, you know, religion comes and goes. Christianity is around a couple thousand years. People have been here millions and millions of years. We've got to get past that.
I think that people have a right to take positions on moral and ethical questions, whether they're religious or not. I think that if everyone – wait a minute, David. It's my turn to talk here. Excuse me, David. My position is that everyone derives their moral and ethical opinions from some source, whether it be that they just make it up or whether they believe in, you know, ethical humanism or whether they believe in whatever. And I think that all of them have a right to do that. Now, that includes – excuse me – that includes people who derive that ethical moral code from the Bible as they see it. And there is nothing in our law that in any way denies that right. That right is a given right. I've never seen any decision by a court that says that a person does not have that right. And I think it's a good thing. Let them come up
and
debate.
We're talking about our opinions, though, right? You asked me my opinion of whether I think it's good for religion to be involved in politics. I'm telling you why it's not good.
Well, okay, and I'm telling you why I think it is good. I mean, you said that it's not good because, you know, I mean, let's get clear here that somehow because they're deriving that opinion from a Bible, that's divisive or that somehow. And by the way, let me differentiate here because I would agree with people who are liberal. If someone is actually advising something that is a theological question in the public sphere, then I would oppose that because that does get into an issue of the separation of church and state. You know, in other words, if you have somebody saying you have to take a loyalty oath to Jesus, you know, I'm against that. I mean, you can't. There's no place in the public sphere for that kind of talk. You know, we're not going to have a debate on whether the Trinity is true. I mean, you know, those things are personal. Those are private matters of faith. I respect people's right to believe those things and to discuss them. But as a matter of public policy, they're not appropriate.
But Chuck, I don't think we're thinking about this that logically. Just to stick with our example of gay marriage for a second here. 73%, according to a survey I looked at yesterday, of people in the U.S. identify as Christian, okay?
Right.
So if we create a law that says, listen, and politicians present it this way, they say, I want to make a law that says gay marriage is illegal because of what Leviticus says, right? And then
right.
we say, okay, well, what other reasons? Do we have any non-Bible reasons to forbid gay marriage? And we say, no, listen, Leviticus 18 says that, and we make it a law. We now have a law based on a religion which 73% of the U.S. today subscribes to. That's not a good law, right? I mean, we should be having laws that are irrespective of particular religion and time. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, I would contend that it doesn't matter if they derive it from a religion or not. The fact is that questions of relationships between human beings, questions of life and death, whether it be abortion or death penalty, whether it be euthanasia, these are very profound questions that transcend any one religion. And if someone derives their opinion from their religion, that's fine as long as we know it, as long as we know what their religion is. But these are issues that are going to be debated by a free society. I mean, it's not...
Right, and
you know
what, Chuck? Here's the thing. Again, I don't know how many times I can say this. It's fine for me if someone's religion informs their political views. The thing is, if we're going to have a debate between people of different religions and people of no religion and atheists and agnostics and so on and so forth, and people of you know, we need to be able to argue what we want on something beyond that. So, for example, this would be an example. If let's say you're against abortion because of your religion, that's
right.
fine. That's how your position is informed. But when you come to the table with people who are just as a part of society as they are, who may not be religious, you've got to have something else to make this a real argument. You can't say, well, I'm against it because my religion says that. You can say, well, okay, I believe that life begins at conception, and let's debate that, okay? That's
sure.
separate from my religion tells me this is wrong. It's certainly informed by it, but that's not a basis for discussion amongst people of different faiths.
Well, I think you're mischaracterizing the religious position here, David, because I think that people, and I'll tell you why I think so, I think that people who do take a position because the Bible says so, they're not just putting it out there in that kind of an undigested statement. They can talk about.
Many people are.
No, I've interviewed people over the years who are very religious, and it's actually a little bit more, you're distilling it down to kind of a stick figure position here. People
well,
can get into.
You should watch my.
Well,
very often.
Yeah, fine. I mean, I think that most intelligent people, and by the way, religious people are intelligent. You might be shocked to know. They can discuss in pretty good detail why they think that abortion is wrong and why they think it's murder. It's not just because the Bible says so. They understand why the Bible says so. I mean, you know, if you ever interviewed a Catholic prelate on this, I mean, you could interview, and I'm not saying I necessarily agree with it. I happen to take a pro-choice position, by the way. But I understand that they have a very, very well-developed opinion on it. It's not just, well, Jesus said so, and this is what I say. You know, the church itself, certainly in Judaism, you have a long tradition of Talmudic responsa that gets into long dissertations on why the Bible says so and what this position's about. It's not just simply, you know, I mean, I think that you, with due respect, either you're mischaracterizing generally the religious position or you're talking to people who are real kind of ignorant themselves.
No, I'm doing it. All I'm doing is drawing a distinction, and because I feel like what you're saying, I'm saying, is that there should people's political views should be in no way informed by their religion. I am not living in this fantasy world where judges nor politicians nor elected officials turn off their religion when they legislate. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is when we have debates over any political issue, you have to take the dogmatic part out of it. The Bible passages can't be part of it because those don't apply to everyone and aren't going to be useful in furthering any real argument. But listen, if you get people to the table to talk about abortion and one person says, well, listen, I believe that this is why we should have abortion based on this science. And someone says, oh, I believe that we shouldn't because of this other research. And someone says, it is clear because God says this. Where does that fit in? It's just, it clouds and it divides. It's not useful in any way.
Well, it's just, again, I mean, it's not just because God says it. They can get into a lot of nuance there. And also,
well,
as far as dogmatism.
Stick to the science of it and forget about what
God
says.
Fine, we could talk about the science of what abortion is. But the point is that to discuss being against a dogmatic position, I mean, are you suggesting that people who are not religious don't have very dogmatic opinions? I mean, I've interviewed people, and again, I tend to be, you know, on the side of I understand that abortion should be legal, even though I hate abortion. I mean, I recognize that.
Do you know anybody who likes abortion?
No, but I know people who I've talked to on the pro-choice side who don't view abortion as having any moral difference than clipping your toenails and who think that it's a way of birth control. I'm not saying they like it, but they view it as good public policy. Now,
okay,
that,
sure, but that's
I think,
you know, I have a big
well,
problem
well,
with
my
this
point,
idea
David,
that there
is that that's a very dogmatic. That's a very dogmatic position, and there are people who do take those positions. I've talked to those people, and some of them are – I'm not going to mention names, but I've talked to somebody who's a pretty high-level politician who takes that position. Abortion's necessary to control populations. Abortion is – you know, I mean, these are also very dogmatic positions, and they're not being taken by people who are religious. Now,
but
I make
they're
this
not
point,
based on Bible scripture, on something
so what?
That means
I make
absolutely
this point, David,
nothing
because
to everyone outside of that particular religion. You need something everybody can agree on counts as fact or reality.
No. I make the point because you can have people who take dogmatic positions, whether they're religious or not, and that, you know, if you're going to remove dogma, if you're going to remove people taking strong positions that are kind of, you know, hard-bound, then why discriminate against religious people? I mean, you've got people who, you know, they claim something is quite scientific. I mean, a lot of people can say something is scientific. Science, responsible scientists might not agree with them. But you have people who take dogmatic positions, whether it be religious or not. That's part of freedom. That's part of free speech. You're not going to get consensus on certain things. People, whether it be moral-based or whether it be so-called science-based, whether that science is good or bad, people are going to take dogmatic positions, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, we can agree to disagree. That's fine.
All right. But I think that, you know, again, I mean, I've noticed that you're somewhat of an equal opportunity criticizer of religion. And I think that I also sense, besides the fact that, as you've said, you think that religion should be banned from the public discourse when making laws because people shouldn't look to the Bible.
No. Again, let me repeat one more time in the interest of trying to get an understanding of what I'm saying.
Please.
Sacred texts, as they are described by whatever religion they are sacred to, should not play a role in how and why laws are written. In other words, we shouldn't be hearing about Paul chapter whatever or, you know, anything like that in law. That I don't believe that should be relevant to law, given the separation of church and state, and that would constitute, in my view, an establishment of a religion. Whatever texts are being used to make law would be, in effect, establishing a religion by the government.
Well, and there's no court that's ever said that you're right about that. Unless, of course, as I mentioned, we're talking theological questions, in which case I do agree with you. But on moral questions, on ethical questions, people have a right to derive their opinion from the Bible or from any other book or from any other source. That's a part of freedom. That's part of what we do. We debate. We all have our own different moral codes. And we
so
derive
as soon
those
as
moral...
someone shows up, so then you would be perfectly fine, I'm sure, with someone showing up in court and saying, listen, I am part of this religion, which is based in, you know, anywhere in the world. It could be Asia, it could be Europe, it could be Africa. And and here's one of those beliefs. And this is why I did whatever it is that I'm being accused of. You'd be fine with that, right? Because it is their religious code, right?
I would be fine with their arguing that, but then, of course, they have to argue it in the context of civil law. You know, in other words, if you have somebody who believes in human sacrifice, they can argue it if they want. You know, if you have a Muslim who believes in Sharia law, let them argue it. You know, execute homosexuals, fine. But they don't have a right to carry it out. They have to. It has to then be brought into the public sphere.
Yeah,
my
I think
point
there's
is
a big
that,
double standard on this. I think there's a big double standard
no,
on
I
this.
Have,
you know?
I'm consistent here, David. I'm saying that people have a right to bring whatever moral code they have into the public sphere and debate it. And it becomes a part of the discussion, and if it fits the Constitution, and if they can convince enough people in a legislature to make something law, then they should be able to do that. But you know, whether they derive it from a book or from a religion or from you know some scientific source or alleged scientific source, that's not relevant. I mean, that's just everyone has their sources.
So basically, what you're saying, Chuck, is that sources are all equally valid for making
no,
law.
No, I'm not.
Whether it
I'm
is science
that,
or whether it is conjecture
no, I didn't
or whether
say
it
that.
Is religion.
No, I'm saying that individuals have a right to derive their sources, and then
but
those
Chuck,
will be judged in the public square.
None of this discussion is about individuals. This is all about what should actually be done by governments, state, local, and federal, in terms of making law. I don't disagree with you. Any loon can show up in court and defend his murder charge with absolutely anything, piece, anything he wants, any book he wants. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about state, federal, and local legislators making law and putting scripture into law as part of the reason why laws are laws. That we can't have.
No, I think groups have a right to do that, but the point is it has to pass the test of our constitutional system. I mean, if a group wants to come into Congress and say, we want to pass the law that requires Americans to swear a loyalty oath to Jesus, I mean, they have a right to do it. They do under our Constitution. There's never been a court case that says they don't have that right. But the
yeah,
point
think,
is, it would
again,
have to.
I think we're just talking about two different things, so we may
no,
not
no,
be able
would
to
have
get any further.
It would have to pass the test. It would have to pass the constitutional muster, and it would have to. They would have to convince enough of their fellow citizens that this was a good idea. But I respect their right to do it. As I said, I respect the right of Muslims to try to advocate Sharia law if that's what they're doing. I just want to have it debated openly and publicly, and let the public take a look at the merits or the demerits of what they're suggesting. The difference, the only differentiation I make is that there is no place in our secular system for theological questions. That's all. But moral questions, yes, absolutely. Everyone has a right to do it, whether they're religious or not. That's part of what governments do. They weigh and measure moral and ethical questions.
Okay, I still am unconvinced we're really getting anywhere because I think we're talking about two different things, but that's perfectly fine. I guess we'll agree to disagree.
David, I also sense, and again, you know, you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, and this is maybe more of a qualitative opinion of mine, but there's a certain scorn that you have for religious people, and particularly...
We started with this, and I kind of answered this at the very beginning.
Well, I want to get into another aspect, something maybe even more fundamental than just your dislike of religious people expressing their opinions in the public sphere because it's religiously based. It's something bigger than that. You actually scorn people who believe, for example, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but there's a scorn for people who believe that God has a role in the secular world. I mean, that they believe that that there's a divine aspect to existence. I mean, you know, I mean, and whatnot. I mean,
I don't scorn those people. People, of course, can believe anything that they want that makes them happier and more satisfied and at peace with their lives. I have absolutely no scorn for them. What I do think is just completely disjointed from reality is, for example, when Pat Robertson says God came to him and told him who's going to win the 2012 election. And then Pat
true?
Robertson goes on the air after the election and says, you know what, I misunderstood when God came to me and told me who was going to win the election. And then, of course, I have a problem when politicians, after either winning or losing or whatever it is, they thank God because God had a hand in it and so on and so forth. And these specific claims, I believe, are the height of pomposity. In other words, if God does exist.
No, I agree with you on that.
Hold on a second, Chuck. I was in the middle of a sentence.
Sorry about that.
I think it is the height of arrogance to believe that God is involved in the internal politics of one country, on one planet, in one solar system, in one galaxy, in the universe. I find that to be very arrogant.
Well, this is where I part company with you. First of all, I agree that it is arrogant and absurd for somebody to say, God told me this or God told me that. What did he come to them on their TV screen? I mean, if Pat Robertson is saying God talked to him, I mean, that's, you know, I have a big problem with that. I don't think God has been talking to directly to people since the days of the prophets.
And why did God stop since then?
Well, that's a mystery. That's something we have to talk to the rabbis about that, but that's what happened. Wow. If you take a look, for example, at the book of Esther, they say that that was the first book of the Tanakh in which God had received.
Yeah, I'm going to tell Chuck, this isn't resonating with me because I don't look at that. That's not the type
of
book
I
do.
But the point I'm making is that on your first point, I agree with you. If people in this day and age are telling me that God's telling them one thing or the other, I'm very, very suspect of that, and I don't believe that.
But 6,000 years ago, you would have believed it.
Well, I wasn't there, were you? I mean, I do believe the Torah, yes. I'm a Jew, and that's what the Torah tells me.
But the point is, just because it's a different time, you believe that those claims are crazy. But at other times, maybe you would have believed.
That's right. I believe that today, in this year, those claims are crazy. I believe that in the days of Moses, when the Torah tells me on Shabbos that this is what happened, I try to believe it. I don't say I totally believe it, but that's what my faith teaches me, and that's what
I'm actually going to make an interesting claim here, Chuck. I wonder what you would react. I think that you are atheist. I think that you are actually atheist, and you're very similar. And, you know, this is interesting because I had a conversation with David Silverman from American Atheist, who was born and raised Jewish, just like I was, just like you were. And he said to me, "What religion are you?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm Jewish. I was raised Jewish. I consider myself culturally and religiously Jewish." And then he said, "Well, do you believe the stuff that's in the Torah?" And he said, "Do you believe a lot of that stuff?" And I said, "Well, I think I would like to think it might be true." And he said, "But you don't really, right? You just think it might have been that way. It might have been that way." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yeah, I guess so. That's not really being religious, right? And you just kind of cast the same doubt, which is, you would like to believe that that's it, but deep down, you have some of the same doubts we all do, don't you,
Chuck?" Well, every person in the world has doubts because God, as I said, doesn't reveal himself anymore.
Yeah, we have no
I mean, we all have atheism as part of every religious person. We all have questioning of God. Every real honest religious person will tell you that. Now, as far as – I just want to briefly point to your second point, which is that you don't think God has any role in natural events in the world, in nations – I disagree with that. I think God does, but I think that people are arrogant when they claim that they know what that role is. You know, that's
well,
so doesn't mean
you,
that God
so, you, so if you can't at all indicate what that role might be, how can you really say that there is a role?
Well, you can sort of try to guess by looking at the Torah and seeing what God did. I mean, that the Torah. I believe the Torah has a divine aspect to it. And it
but
gives
so then what does the Torah tell you are God's roles in everyday events?
It gives a direction in terms of how to live the good life, how to fall off the good life, and how nations should behave, how they should interact with each other.
Who is he giving that direction to?
He gave the direction to the children of Israel at Sinai.
Okay, so then how does that translate to the nations today? Because that was before we really had modern nations.
No, but it was the beginning of modern nations, and I think that what it does is that the Decalogue of Sinai, which is a series of ethical and moral codes, are a blueprint for how nations should behave. Now, that
but
doesn't
so then,
mean...
Chuck, you're really saying what you just condemned, which is that God is involved in the day-to-day politics today.
I'm saying, yes, he is involved. No, I didn't. I'm not contradicting myself there. I believe God is involved, but I think that for an individual to come up, like a Pat Robertson or whoever, and say that they know exactly what God, you know, that to me is arrogant. Only God
so
knows.
So you believe Pat Robertson to be a charlatan, is that correct?
In this case, yeah. I mean, if that's what he said, if he came out and said, God came to me, and you know, I would ask him exactly how. Did he come to you on your TV set? No, I mean,
and
yes.
And the fact that he's made millions off of this certainly would make you think negatively of him, that he's made so much money off of what you consider to be charlatanism.
In this case, yeah. I mean, if he's saying, God came to me on my computer, I don't know how he did it, and
well,
he told me
he
X, Y, and Z, then yeah, that's
during prayer.
I think that's highly suspect for him to say that. But what's
I'm glad
not
to hear
suspect?
You say that. I'm glad to hear you say that.
Thank you. But what's not suspect is for a preacher like the Pat Robertson, if you want to use as an example, to look at the text of the Torah and say, nations that do X, Y, and Z have fallen into sin, and I think that we're heading in that direction, or nations that do A, B, and C are successful, and I think we should go there. They're looking at,
nonsense,
in other words,
fear-mongering. This stuff of sin and the list of things you can and can't do, I think it's nonsense. I think once we move forward, in other words, we're thinking in such small scales. Look at the scope of human existence, right, since humans have existed. Modern religion, as we know it, Christianity, Judaism, etc., if I were to stretch my arms out side to side to create kind of a timeline, we're talking about not even the width of my fingernail where this exists. We have to take a longer view and realize that this is we're going to move past this. We're going to move past this stuff.
Past the idea of good and evil, sin and goodness?
Not past the idea of good and evil, but the idea that there's different levels of abominations, from homosexuality to eating shellfish to cutting your hair short, all of that specificity. I think that that has really, in the broader scheme of human existence, we're talking about a couple thousand years, over tens of millions of years. It's almost not even on the map, you know?
Well, you obviously don't like the Judeo-Christian, or certainly in this case, the Jewish teachings of
I don't like it. I mean, listen,
I strongly identify with
my Jewish ethnicity and culture. What I don't identify with is the putting in, you know, the buying into the specifics of what is a sin today and what isn't, and how is it reinterpreted now. We're talking about stuff that it's really very new, right? Humans didn't have Jesus and Christianity and Judaism more than a few thousand years, and we've been around tens of millions of years. I like and really relish my Jewish heritage and ethnicity and culturalism, and I go to young Jewish groups and all that stuff, but it's not about the religion part for me. That part I don't buy into.
No, I get that. That's pretty clear. I don't know exactly how long we've been around either, by the way, but you seem to know for sure.
What I'm saying is, we have. I mean, right? Jesus was around 2,000 years ago, right? So,
yeah,
so what I'm
right.
saying is, we humans have been around tens of millions of years, and this religion has only been around.
Well, what I'm suggesting, David, is putting. I don't really want to go too far into this, unless you do. But I don't know how many millions of years we've been around. Nobody does. No, any honest scientist will tell you that.
We've got pretty good estimates, Chuck, and it's certainly not 6,000.
Maybe not, but I don't know if we do have good estimates. I mean, you could take. I mean, we could. I don't want to go divert into
if
that.
If you want to go anti-science, we can definitely go that
that's
way.
That's not anti-science.
That's the bad direction for the Republican Party. That's why you guys got creamed last election.
It's responsible science to not get dogmatic, if you will,
right,
and make flat statements about science when things are not. Proven. Actually, responsible science is much more open-minded and much broader.
It
but,
is. You know, it
on
be,
the issue
it could be
of
tens of millions, it could be billions, but it's not 6,000, Chuck.
Well, I'm glad you're so dogmatic about that, David. You're so sure.
I'm not. I'm completely wide open. I'm giving you a range of hundreds of millions of years. I'm just saying
well,
it's not
thank you
6,
so
000.
Much. I mean, I think that responsible scientists will tell you that nobody knows those things. But and if you have somebody who says otherwise, I'd like to probe that with them. But I want to get back to the issue of faith. You know, putting aside whether we've been here for 7,000 or 10,000 years or however many years,
right.
The Torah gives mankind, in my opinion, a set of principles on how nations should interact with each other. And it really are principles that transcend whether it are religious questions. You know, whether you believe that was given by God at Sinai, or whether you believe that they were written by very wise men, or however it happened.
Sure. So if they transcend that, then certainly we can point to them in places that would be less divisive because they're not associated with one religion. If these are just the tenets that humans are humans, and not humans as Jews or Christians would follow, we must have that same list elsewhere, right? We don't need to point to the religious one.
Well, the point is that the principles of the Torah are very universal. I mean, they get into how individuals should and should not react with each other. They get into how nations should and should not react with each other.
But, Chuck, couldn't that be viewed one other way, which is that the principles of humans have been reflected in the Torah, right? It's not necessarily the direction you're going. It could be the opposite.
Well, okay. We could say you could take the position, or one could take the position, that the Torah is a reflection of very smart human beings who put together this code one could say that it was a divine gift to man. I tend to view the divine thing, and I'll tell you why. Putting aside the actual belief aspect, I think that there is something to be said for the idea of immutable truths that can't be manipulated by governments and by people based upon on fashion. There is something that is very
freeing. I don't
know
that I agree with you. I mean, taking a broader stance, I think it's very hard for us to imagine. In other words, we're humans. You know, we have very small lifespans compared to how long there has been kind of modern society. And modern society is very, very small compared to how long humans have been around. And humans on Earth have been around a really small amount of time compared to the age of the universe. So I think we don't know enough to say that murder, like, in other words, I could imagine situations where if our everything was totally different, the different world, different planet, everything, maybe murder is a part of life that on that planet is considered not only necessary but good, right? I have no idea. I don't think it has anything to do with God, but I just think even concepts of good and evil as we know them on Earth, they could be different somewhere else.
Well, yeah, but we're talking about our own planet here, David. I don't go on other planets.
When you talk about God, and God is completely omnipotent, God is involved in way more planets than just this one, right?
That may be, may not be. Again, you seem to have a real certainty about that, a great dogmatic.
I don't. What I'm saying is, listen,
I don't know
so
if there are
planets.
Other, I don't know if there's life on other planets.
We can't be the only one.
I don't know. Look, my position on that is somewhat agnostic. I just don't know, and I'm willing to say
that. Yeah, it's just weird because
and
when,
I've interviewed
when it comes
people,
to this stuff, all of a sudden you start backtracking. I don't know.
Not at all. I've interviewed people, and I'm sure you have too, who claim that they've been in touch with aliens from outer space. I mean, my position on that
is really
quite...
not really my thing.
Okay, neither is it mine, because my position on those things are...
But you said you
haven't
interviewed those people.
Excuse me? No, I have interviewed a few of them. And I say to them, show me the evidence. I want to see proof. Take me there. Get me a plane
ticket.
So then
how come when someone says to you, show me the evidence that God wrote the Bible, how come you can't... Why can't you understand it's the same level of disbelief?
Because that's a matter of faith. It's not a matter of...
But it's those people's faith too, Chuck.
But they claim it's absolute science. I'm not claiming that.
But Chuck,
and I don't make
that
claim.
Be critical of someone else for something they think is their faith and truly believe it, but then
people
criticizing your faith.
No, the difference is no, not at all. The difference is that I am not claiming with absolute scientific fact that the Bible was given by God. Nor do most religious people, by the way.
Okay.
I'm saying that I accept it as a matter of faith. Now, if they tell me that they accept as a matter of faith that there are space aliens, fine. But the point is that they present this as absolute truth. They've seen them. They've said that they have green skin and they have black eyes.
Well, many people present the same religious parables you talk about as absolute. So I think we have to suspend disbelief equally with all of them in the absence of evidence.
No, I think that you try to take a look at you try to be discerning, and you try to take a look at things that, in my opinion, if you take a look at the biblical Decalogue and the moral and ethical codes that are there, you can see that these things have been applied over time, and they have contributed to human experience and societal experience to the point where they have been proven. I think, for example, that the United States is basically founded, and I don't think this is disputable, primarily on the Judeo-Christian moral code. I think that that doesn't mean that they're saying you have to believe in Jesus. It doesn't mean they're even religious. But the judicial system comes from, if you study the Bible, it comes from the messages of Jethro with Moses and how he set up separate governments. The idea of private property came from Abraham when he purchased the cave to bury his wife and went through a long ritual of how much it was costing, the amount of gold he paid for it, the borders of it. It set up the principle of private property. I think that these are principles that have proven to work over many, many centuries. So they have a certain ring of truth to them. Now, whether or not they were absolutely given by God, that's a matter of faith. But there is something true about the principles that are there because they function. They have been applied, and they have been applied well.
Okay, all right. I don't think we're going to get too much further on this one.
Okay, but just to get back to the original point, I think that, you know, to recap, I pointed out that you, and I'm not saying you personally, but I'm saying you as someone who is part of the so-called progressive movement, have a certain disdain for people who believe that there's a divine aspect to nature. And
I've already addressed how you're wrong about assuming that about me.
Okay. Just in a quick sentence, tell me where I'm wrong on that.
Again, I've indicated I don't have any disdain or scorn for people who are religious.
That's not about
as
the belief,
indicated.
David.
I gave
not
a long,
people.
We've been talking for a half hour about the nuance of it. So to go back
I'm not
to your
talking
original
about, listen carefully.
Point claim,
I'm not talking
so.
About people who hold those beliefs. I'm talking about your beliefs and people on the left, that there's a disdain for the idea that there's a divine aspect, there's a supernatural aspect in human existence.
I mean, listen, Chuck, I already spoke for myself. I can't speak for other people on my side or your side, or I don't know whose sides we're on. I've given my point of view. You can talk to other progressives to get their points of view.
And
I
have.
Can't speak for them.
I'm not asking you to. I'm saying that there's a trend that I've observed over time, both from people I have talked to and also things I've read, that people who are so-called progressive have a disdain for the idea that there is a divine element in existence, that there
I've
is
never
a supernatural.
Seen any, I like to go by studies. I've not seen studies that say that. What I have seen are studies that show that with time, people are becoming less and less religious, and that the more education people have, on the whole, the less religious they are. Those are the studies I have. I don't have studies. The ones you're citing, I've not seen.
No, and I agree with that. My point, that has nothing to do with what I'm saying here. I'm saying that
well,
people...
Well, what I'm saying is I just don't have any evidence to corroborate or deny what you're saying.
Right, but okay, fine. Then I'll just simply restate it and we'll move on to another subject. I've observed that both in your writings, and again, with due respect, and in people on the left, that there is a disdain for the idea that there is a supernatural element. There's a materialist approach to philosophy, and that the idea that there might be a divinely inspired set of principles that we should live by is something that's looked down upon as maybe embraced by those who are less educated. I don't know, but
I don't know. I just all I can say is what's in the studies I've looked at.
Well, the studies are true. There were less people who are believers. There's the country's moving more toward a materialistic stand. I don't deny that. My point is that
non-belief is equivalent to materialistic in any way. I mean, there's many, many, many people that are spiritual and introspective and self-adjusted and so on and so forth without believing in, you know, Jesus. So I don't agree that materialism is what appears in the absence of religion.
Well, materialism
is... We've seen no evidence of that, at least.
Materialism is a philosophy that rejects the spiritual side. That's a fact. Look it up in the dictionary. I mean, materialism.
What I'm telling you is that the absence of religion is certainly not being reflected. You know, I mean, I'm sure conservatives would say, well, the absence of religion is why we have gay marriage and access to legal and safe abortions, but I would argue those are good things.
Fine. You could take positions on that. I mean, those are profound moral questions that can be debated whether one derives that opinion from their religious faith or not. The point that, but materialism as an idea is one that believes that all human existence, all existence in general, can be explained by material means. Everything is finite. Everything exists as material. The real extreme materialists of the early 19th century even believed that human thought could be explained in material terms. But the point is
that it can't. Or, I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
No, I don't believe it can. I think there is a spiritual side to life. I think the human being has a soul. I think that there is something more. We're not just a bag of bones that wakes up every day and somehow operates. It's obvious to me, and I think that Thomas Jefferson said it best when he referred to it as, quote, self-evident, that there is something bigger than just, material existence. Yes, I do believe that.
Okay. All right. Well, you're certainly free to believe that.
And I think that just since we're reaching the end of the program, one of the biblical principles that I think made this country what it is and that was embraced by Jefferson, who was not a particularly religious person in the denominational sense, but quite spiritual, was when he said in the Declaration of Independence, and of course he didn't live up to it himself because he had slaves, but he did say all men are created equal. Now that principle is directly derived from the book of Genesis. Where God says that he created man and women. He does say woman as in the image of the creator. I don't have
right.
a quote
well,
in
you
front
said
of me.
Thomas Jefferson didn't live up to it, so that probably tells us everything we need to know.
No, well, he didn't as a person, but the principle is there, and that principle is what has made us a nation, in a sense, separate, in that we believe that all men are created equal.
Yeah, except we had slavery for a really long time after that.
Right.
That was outlined. So apparently it didn't hold true for him personally, and it certainly
didn't. No, it didn't, but it holds true. It holds true
way.
As the founding principle of the nation. No, it doesn't hold true to individuals. But the idea that all men are created equal.
The nation, slavery was legal.
Until we had a civil war. But the
right.
idea that all people are created equal is a religious principle. And that
I
think
disagree.
It was,
I think it is just basic science. People are people. We are human beings. We are created
equal. No, actually,
people,
basic science would tell you that.
You know, if you look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it's there. You know, it's in a lot of places. I don't think it's
yeah,
religious
but David,
in any way.
Basic
I think religion
science,
is using it, and you're using it to try to point to religion or give credit to religion.
Yeah, basic,
no
basic science.
At all.
Basic science in today, the trend in basic science would indicate that all people are not created equal, actually. That we're in different states of evolution, that some people are more evolved than others, because if the species is evolving, then through natural selection and the mating with superior members of the race, you're developing superior members who eventually will evolve in umpteen millions of years into a new species. So
what's so
the
funny about
that,
Chuck, is that if you do believe that, then
I
you've
don't
got
believe
it
that.
Now. That
I
the
don't
earth is
believe.
More than 6,000 years old, because that stuff takes a long, long time.
Yeah,
like
but you've just kind of made my point that if you believe in those theories, you believe that we're at different rungs on the evolutionary scale and that we are therefore not born equal. My point is that the Bible tells us, and this is an American principle, whether we've lived up to it or not, and we haven't in most cases, but it's there as a principle, that all men are created equal. That is not a scientific idea if you take a look at present scientific trends. I think it is scientific because I think that the Bible is scientific. But scientific fashion would hold that that's not the case. It would hold that we're all not equal. Anyway, David,
yeah,
we've reached the end of the program.
We're coming up on the end of the hour because we're going far into the weeds now that I wouldn't even know where to respond.
No, it's getting real. This is just getting interesting. But I really appreciate you joining me as always. By the way, you did a pretty good interview. I have one criticism with those nutcake anti-gay guys. I actually watched that. Those two preachers,
yep.
One of whom is holding up the signs. I just wish you had challenged them a little bit more. I think you gave them too much space.
Let them argue with each other to show that anti-gay ideas are so absurd that they all conflict with each other. In other words,
yeah,
people who are
anti-gay
can't even agree on why to be anti-gay.
With due respect, it didn't really work that way because they both were able to quietly and articulately get across their very ugly points.
The
and I wish you had
people who saw it disagree with you, Chuck. Fortunately,
fine. I wish you had taken them on a little bit more. You kind of just sat there. I mean, that, with due respect,
I've had
and
them
I know
on that, individually, and I take them on there. That interview really had another purpose.
I know it, but I feel you gave them too much of a forum. Anyway, David, again, I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon.